What's going to flow. He's now going to talk to us about ART therapy for the newly diagnosed and correctional system. It just all flows one by one.
Hi, so the benefit of this is we can skip some intro slides, but just to set the stage, I want to talk specifically about how we handle newly diagnosed patients with HIV. So we do have, we're part of the Enhanced Link, and we have a whole program dedicated to the discharge planning of people who come with HIV, which is about 5% of our population. But we have a special set of tasks to do for people that we find newly with HIV because of the clinical considerations, because of the, like, you know, extra stress and burdens on people who are just finding out that they have HIV. So that's what I'm going to talk about here is, and it goes to this point of when we find people newly diagnosed them with HIV, do we start them on ARVs? What kind of care are we getting them? And even our discharge planning for them needs to be a little bit different because it's, you know, it's, and we know, actually one thing I'll mention is we know we just in the last 6 months have started cross-matching these folks with, in New York State we have the HARS database, and so we know that the people we find as new positives are about two-thirds of the time truly new positives. That is, in all of New York State, there's no positive HIV test for them. So up until recently, we didn't know how many of these people are new positives and how many of these people never got a test before, do we know. But most of them are true new positives. And so I think it goes to this notion when you see these numbers of the Herculean amount of tests you do to find one of these folks, we're always getting pushback. Every round of budget cuts besides STI testing, they're coming to us and saying, we spent all this money on HIV testing, why bother? You're doing 35,000 tests a year and you're finding 125 new positives. But now we have more evidence to say, these are new positives and these people need a lot of services with us where they can get them as opposed to going out in the community and getting, you know, quite ill and needing much more expensive interventions. So I have no disclosures for this talk to report. This is Rikers, as you saw before. We don't need to go through that. So as I said, about 5% of the people who come into our system self-report with HIV. Aside from what I'm going to talk about with newly diagnosed, we have a separate system on a daily, we have a new EHR, so we have an electronic health record in all 11 jails. And so on a daily basis, anybody who has HIV and has a problem list, we then, our director of HIV services rectifies that list of new admissions with whether or not they're on ARVs. And so on the, within, say, 48 hours of admission, whatever happened in the clinical encounter during the intake, we're able to assess on our own, did we start ARVs and are we satisfied with, this is for known positives, whether or not ARVs were started. Because I think one of the areas we've really struggled with is, you know, physicians being a little lax about asking about HIV medicines, about taking somebody's report that they don't remember their medicines at face value and not pulling up the chart and going through the meds. And so we in the last year have really tried to buckle down on getting ARVs started. You know, if somebody says they're on lisinopril 5 or 10, physicians aren't going to challenge them on it. They'll say, okay, here's your lisinopril. But for some reason, our physicians have gotten into this practice of people say, I think I'm on this or I don't know, but then they can point it out on a card. Then the physicians say, well, you can wait and see the ID specialist. Like, that's not my, I'll let that go. And so I think we, for the known positives, is an area of work for us that's been a struggle. So about a third of people, a little more than a third, get an HIV test. Actually, in the last 6 months, we've now gotten our new admission testing up to 40% acceptance, which is the highest we've ever had in our system. You know, obviously, we know the figures about prevalence and corrections of HIV. And you'll see the positivity rate is low, which is the thing that draws the ire of the people who pay for these tests. So this is our workflow. I'll just go down to the bottom there. So when somebody has a new positive test, so they came in and they said yes to their test, we don't have a history of HIV with them, there's a good collection of work that we do right away that's pretty standard. You'll see that at the bottom there we have mental health, health education, and infectious disease. So we have different, those are all different, so people are automatically going to be seen by a mental health professional. We have health educators who are HIV, you know, they're trained in treatment adherence and health education, so they'll be case managing these new positives. And then we have four ID docs that cover our system. So each ID doc covers two jails, give or take, and their panel is not necessarily everybody with HIV, but it's people who are referred to them. So all new positives, for instance, would be referred to them. People with medication problems, anybody who's with us for more than a month who has HIV. So they see some small percentage of everybody with HIV, but there are referral experts so that we don't have to send people out to the hospital. Although we can, we do once in a while. So this is the data that we looked at. And so over 2 years, we have about 250 new positives. So you look in that time, we did 65,000 tests. So we're doing, I don't know, close to 3,800 or 4,000 tests for every new positive. So, you know, if your concerns are efficiency and Six Sigma and lean technology and all the crap that like people in the budget office are talking to us about, that doesn't look very good. And this is why HIV testing is always at the top of their list with STD testing for things to take a whack at. I will say that I started as deputy medical director in 2008 and then became medical director a year later, and we have had every year one death from somebody presenting, unknown to have HIV, presenting with an AIDS-defining illness. So PCP, toxo, a meningitis. Each year we've had one of these cases that you would think you're dealing with, I think what some of you saw, 10, 15 years ago. It still happens to us. And so those cases are people who come in, get very sick, they go to the hospital for a long time, and in most cases they get better, but, in some tragic cases they die. But those people still exist, and they're still out there. And the fact that we find 125 of them, or let's say we find 75 of them a year, let's say 2/3 of the new positives are truly new positives, those are still folks that are poised to go back out to the community and soak up a huge amount of resources, putting aside, what we want to do for them personally as providing care to them. And the positivity rate, obviously, is higher among the women than it is among the men. So the age distribution is pretty similar. The only thing I would point out is that of these cases, the standard deviation is a little bit less for the women, so it's a little bit more consistently grouped to the older age than it is for the men, but that's the only, other than that, it's these two, the men have these kind of bimodal distributions. So one of the things that surprised us is these new positives, the CD4 counts actually I thought would be worse. I don't know, I'd be interested to get your observations about from your practice. Still, 60% of these folks fall into the range of treatment, just going purely by the CDC guidelines on the CD4s. The mental health diagnosis, that's basically the same as everybody else in our jail system. About 1/3 of the people in our system are in the mental health service. I think the thing that's different here is that obviously in the women's facility, it's about 50-55% of the women are in the mental health service, and it's about 30% of the men. But even among the women, that's the HIV doesn't look different from the rest of the population for us. So if you look at the bottom there first, 202 of these people were not started on ARVs while they were with us. So that's most people. When we look at why they didn't get started, the most common reason is just that they're with us for a very brief amount of time. So in our system, while our average length of stay is about 40 days, our median length of stay is about 7 or 8 days. So in our system, what happens is you come in, we have this long 4-hour history and physical intake with a doctor and a nurse and a PCA. That's where we do most of our HIV testing. So let's say you're newly positive there. Then we do the confirmatory. We have mental health visit that day or the next day. Then we have you back probably in 1 or 2 days, but we're still waiting for your labs. So let's say it takes 3 days to get your labs back. By the time we get to day 3, about 35-40% of people are gone. By the time we get to really, it's probably a week in where you're going to be sitting down with an ID specialist, having had already 2 other clinical encounters to talk about this, half those people are gone. So I think in jails, that's the single most challenging aspect, and that's why discharge planning is so important, as we were discussing, is we will lose these people quickly. So if once we give somebody a label of, like, we medicalize them in any respect, it's on us to make sure we can do something for them instead of just having given them this distressing label and, you know, knowing, we know that they're going to be gone very quickly. The interesting thing is that the not clinically indicated, you know, those are the folks basically that had the higher CD4s, throw in a couple other things about maybe if somebody was, you know, like psychotic or had some other reason that we wouldn't start them on treatment right away. So most of the people that we find who are new positives, we do not start. So we have, as I mentioned, kind of, we have discharge planning for everybody with HIV in our system, I think like some other systems. If you have mental illness or if you have HIV, we have a huge amount of discharge planning for you, which is great for those folks. I think the unfortunate thing is for people who have very bad diabetes and we want discharge planning, we have to go get some of these discharge planners and say, can you please, you know, which we basically have to do on a case-by-case basis. So, you know, if 5% of our people have HIV and a third of our people have mental illness, those populations have pretty much guaranteed discharge planning. For, you know, the people with Hep C and seizure disorders and diabetes and hypertension and asthma, we have little to nothing. And I think that is like one of the great shames of corrections, is you see the growth of these programs that are for this population or that, but it's, you know, one of my hopes for the Affordable Care Act and some of the state iterations of the Affordable Care Act is that we will now be forced to, because we're going to be billing for these folks relatively soon for Medicaid, we will be forced to be accountable for finding out about their care in the community when they come in and then handing them off for everybody on the way out. And I think that that is, my hope is that that's a kind of a change that levels the playing field for all these folks. And I don't know levels, but brings this bar up, the HIV mental health bar up to help the people with diabetes and seizures. So nothing, our discharge planning also, you know, we're able to get most of these folks appointments, and then if we get an appointment, we get them there, we'll take them there, we'll meet them in court, we'll give them their meds for 30 days. I will say one of the interesting things about our challenges, which I was thinking about with your talk, is that we know what we know. So that, like, in all of our discharge planning efforts, whether it's mental health or HIV, you know, we always report that, like, we found these many people on follow-up, and of the people we found on follow-up, this many got what we wanted. So basically, I think we're looking at, those are the, answering the same thing, or it's the same variable, which is the people we can find are the people that are with it, that are reliable, that are going to go. So the people we can find are the people that are going to get go to the doctor. The people we can't find, you know, are the ones that are falling through the cracks. And so we are trying to think about, we're starting to look at Medicaid claims data for everybody that we do discharge planning for to see, like, what happened to the people we didn't find. Like, did they go somewhere else? And then we're also starting to really look at them when they come back. So of the people we didn't find versus the people we knew what happened to them, what happened to their CD4s the next time they were incarcerated. And then the reasons for not starting, really the most common is the short stay in the jail setting. So this is a lot of effort that goes into finding a small number of cases. I continue to think it's well worthwhile. The fact that every year we're finding, whether it's 75 or 100 people in our community that are undiagnosed, is important. And I think that these are, because we have the benefit of being in the health authority for the city of New York. And so we are able to credibly say to the city, we're finding these folks here and we're getting them into care instead of letting them show up in the ED in 6 months or a year or 2 years with an AIDS-defining illness. I think the third bullet, you know, our commissioner was very keen to know if the recent change in the in the recommendations about when to initiate for CD4 and viral load would change our practices, but, you know, the barriers are not that. Like, the barriers are, like most things in corrections, a small change in clinical guidelines is not what's probably going to inform your practice. It's practicalities of every day, you lose your patient, or there's an access problem, or, you know, the things that are not related to the infectious disease guidelines. Okay, thank you very much.